Chapter 28. In a single stride, Akreen stepped away from the underground chamber of the Incarnalith and emerged into a stony, plantless ravine. Gutuzna, ancient refuge of the Builder's last sentient machines, was behind him, and the ruined road lay ahead. Storm clouds raced through the sky, but down in the sheltered ravine the air was warm, and only a scattering of raindrops speckled the grey rocky sides or spattered on Akreen's silvery grey skin. There were no signs of animal life either, so he had no means of knowing if this world was poisoned in some way. But the oval portal gate tracker was giving a definite reading, more than a mile beyond one of the ravine's sheer cliff walls. Akreen took a couple of steps back and surveyed the imposing, uneven surface for a few moments. Then he walked a few paces further along, approached the cliff, and began to climb. The ascent took him out of the ravine's sheltering depths, exposing him to stronger, gusting breezes, although nothing more than a sporadic shower was coming down. There was something satisfying about moulding his hands and feet to the cracks and slots in the rock face and steadily making his way upwards, rising out of shadow and into the light as he had already done several times in the course of this strangest of quests. The clifftop turned into a slope of huge shattered boulders that looked as if they were once massive square-edged blocks of upheaved bedrock, which had been worn and rounded by an age of harsh weather. Akreen traversed the slope by clambering around the great blocks, sometimes ducking through short tunnels formed by floodwater rushing through gaps beneath the huge, tilted slabs. At last, he reached the top of the rise, emerged from the jumbled boulder maze, and stared out at a wide, hazy plain littered with the ruins of fallen cities.
"Aha!" said Gridaz. "The myths about the sky palaces of Agascri had a core of truth after all."
"The rotted bones of another tribe of bested inferiors," Zivalin said. "Gilded perches hurled to the ground." The latter's comment surprised Akreen a little. As he carefully descended from the crest, he wondered if Zivalin was being overly contemptuous, or was it merely a knee-jerk dismissal of the defeated? The portal gate tracker led him downslope to the remains of a large circular building. Roofless, its walls were reduced to waist-high stumps, yet there was very little debris or rubble scattered within or nearby. Akreen followed the tracker's quiet beeping to a central room where broad stairs curved up to an empty platform. He climbed the steps and, sure enough, when he reached the top, the oval portal gate appeared. He paused for a last look at the hazy ruins of fallen palaces, then stepped through the gate. Abruptly, he was floating in icy, airless darkness. Quickly, he adjusted his eye filters, and a moment later, he could see that he had appeared next to an immense rock surface beneath some titanic, wedge-shaped splinters floating side by side like pieces of a vast puzzle that no longer quite fitted together. Recalling the munition-devastated ruins of the planet Gutuzna, he could see how orbital bombardments had had similar effects here, cracking this world down to its core. Convulsions had torn out the planet's viscera, gravitational shifts altering the axial spin, with massive layers of atmosphere bleeding off into space. All that was left was this desolate sepulchre, raked by hard vacuum. The tracker device led him across the flat expanse of rock, a weightless flight in near zero-G, to where a square entrance led into a rib and column reinforced cavern. As he drifted towards the centre, the portal gate flickered into existence. The next world was hot, seared by the sun, scoured by sandstorms. Akreen's journey to the next gate took him across a line of rocky hills that skirted a wide, flat plain. The plain was the abode of several large insects and reptiles, but what prompted a certain caution was the immense edifice that lay at the centre. Akreen was not sure if it had been grown or engineered, but it was undoubtedly the product of a singular purpose. It was a gargantuan, monstrous head, perhaps 300 yards high. It had a thick brow and a wide, heavy jaw, and sat upon the plane with a forward tilt angled a little to the side, with its cave-like eyes fixed on the horizon. Off in the distance, Akreen could make out the broken and split remnants of other massive heads. It also appeared to be hollow, going by the shadowy shapes that moved around inside its eyes and mouth.
"The mind temples of Rortantir," said Gredaz. "According to some old tales, the monks sang the endless star songs in shifts."
A flock of shadowy shapes burst forth from eyes and mouth, wheeling in Akreen's direction. Even at this distance, he had been spotted.
"And now they're temples to bones and excreta," said Zivalin. "No songs, no monks, only dust and these ugly beasts."
And ugly they were. With an overall dark red colour, they had flexible, membranous wings with hooks at their tips, short, whip-like tails, and a pair of white eyes on either side of a rudimentary head that was all mouth. The leading members of the flock caught up with Akreen when he was still some distance from the exit portal, uttering a harsh, blaring squall as they dived at him. Without breaking stride, Akreen grabbed the first one to get within arm's length, snapped its wings, and flung it to the ground. Its agonizing screeches drew the flock leaders back for a few moments, but they soon continued their pursuit, catching up with him again. There was a trail of bloody, broken corpses in his wake by the time the tracker led him to a hill with a flat, paved summit. The oval gate appeared, and without hesitation, he lunged through. On the other side of the dark oval, he found himself weightless again, but this time he was underwater, submerged in darkness. Engaging the eye filters again, Akreen saw he was floating not far from a pale, curved pillar thicker than his own torso. He swam over, and close up saw that it was a massive, tapering bone. There was another just visible in the murk, curving the same way, and when he swam between them, he spied a segmented line of pale fossils down below and more bones curving in from the other side. Conclusive proof that he was drifting through a titanic ribcage. When he took out the portal tracker, it was indicating roughly in the same direction as the sweep of the bony remains. It wasn't long before Akreen found the creature's colossal skull, and the buildings and towers that had been built into it and upon it, clearly when it was alive. The only ocean life currently visible were small paddling creatures and shoals of tiny swimmers with oddly hinged tails. Akreen wondered if the effects of the long-past wars had so eradicated life from this world's seas that now only the most meagre of species could survive.
"Think what it has taken for the sentient peoples of the war cage to survive the Shuskar. What has been erased and what had to be abandoned," said Gredaz.
Akreen had no reply to give. Instead, he searched the nearby seabed and found the portal gate opening at the foot of a giant overhang. He fell out of the other side of the one-way gate, fell wet and dripping onto a heap of flat metallic objects. Streaming with water, he got to his feet and saw that he was surrounded by mounds and drifts of battered, shapeless objects in many colours. It was daylight, and he was standing in the shadow of a disorganized stack of ragged, compacted cubes of some unidentifiable material. And it was clear that he had arrived in some kind of vast garbage dump. His olfactory sense was detecting oil and rust and decaying organics. Akreen produced the gate tracker, studied the readout, then set off on a course with the sun at his back. The route followed a rough-hewn roadway along the side of a long, rocky scarp, which jutted above the general undulating sea of trash. The road had a shallow upward incline, and the higher he climbed, the greater the distances that were unveiled on all sides. And it was soon apparent that the garbage tip stretched away for as far as he could see in all directions. Could this have been a dumping ground for nearby war cage worlds in past decades, even centuries? But observations told him that much of the trash on display was of a more recent vintage. He continued up the rough road, which spiralled around till it reached what lay at the summit, an immense sculpture of a figure seated with cupped hands held out at chest level. It was very, very old, its details eroded by time and the elements, but it was the still-suited figure lying sprawled and face down at its feet that caught his eye. Beginning to look, Akreen saw several small holes in the back of the suit helmet, and when he turned the body over, a desiccated skull stared up at him through the visor.
"Metal-eating parasites," said Gredaz, "chewed their way into the protective suit. The holes let in gaseous poisons, and death overwhelmed him."
"Why have such creatures not attacked me?" Akreen said.
"You have been attacked repeatedly since our arrival here in this vast tract of junk," said Zivaline. "But before they even take a bite, something makes them shrivel up and drop off. What could that be, I wonder?"
Akreen nodded in silence, understanding. The Incarnalith of Khaldro Vryn, the potent shards of an ancient Zavri general. The Inheritor Machine's claim was that they would take over the control systems of the Sunheart, the Builder's fabled refuge within the War Cage's sun, and make inevitable the ousting and defeat of the Gunlords and the Shuskar. Of course, he was placing great trust in this promise, he knew that, which sharpened the distrust that he was keeping in abeyance for now. Assurance from unverifiable sources demanded caution, especially when they did not explain puzzles, no matter how minor. As he released the suited corpse, it slumped onto its back, and one arm slid aside to reveal a small brown book. He picked it up, brushed away encrusted dust, and saw that it had a single letter or symbol on its cover. A suspicion tickled the edge of his thoughts, so he stowed the book away in a pouch that he formed at one side of his midriff. Akreen then held out the tracking device and moved around the monument to triangulate his destination. Satisfied, he approached the big seated figure and started to climb. The portal gate had formed in the cupped hands of the sculpture by the time he had hauled himself up to stand on one of the arms.
"Just a few more steps," said Gredaz. "Soon we will face the enemy of our people, the enemy of all, and wrest away their power."
"So the Inheritor Machine said," Akreen replied. "But still, I do not find it entirely trustworthy."
"Who is?" said Zivaline. "Sadly, there is no obvious way back. So you can either lie down next to that bag of bones down there, or embrace the unknown."
Walking along the crooked arm, he reached the dark, pulsing oval.
"Truth is cold," he said. "Let the unknown beware."
He shouldered forth into the swirling darkness, which drew him forward as before. But instead of emerging from the one-way destination gate an instant later, the moment felt stretched or suspended, and the darkness seemed to contract around him, squeezing, smothering. Then it eased and withdrew and opened, and his outstretched leg completed that step as his foot struck a solid surface. He staggered into brightness, a broad, elevated walkway of some kind, with other levels tiered beneath and above, a subsurface dock, he realised, as he saw a couple of vessels berthed along at one end, while nearer there was an impressive tower rising before him, and several humanoids gathered warily about him.
"Hey, isn't that, what's his name? The Zavri guy. That's him. The captain had us chasing after him on that smashed up planet.
I think that the captain will want to know about this.
Immediately. Sure, Oleg, sure. I was about to, you know.
A Kreen turned to one of the assorted bipeds as it was fumbling with a head-mounted communicator.
You are the followers of Captain Pike, correct? That's us, was the reply. Loyal followers, usually suffering for it. I'm Ansel, by the way.
The short, scrawny human held out his hand, and a Kreen gravely shook it.
I see that this is the Shuskar Citadel world, he observed. I must speak with your captain urgently. Right. I see. Immediately and urgently. Okay.
There then ensued repeated calls on the communication device for a short time, then excitement when contact with Pike was established, followed by several infuriatingly irrelevant exchanges until the human Ansel finally broached the crucial matter.
Well, it didn't vanish on our side like it did before, and you'll never guess who walked right out of it.
What?
A two-headed gorilla dressed like a clown and singing the hills of Connemara. Well, no, as a matter of fact, it was the big silver guy, a Kreen, the Zavri general.
First Blade, a Kreen said.
Oh, yeah, First Blade, a Kreen, and he's very keen to have a word, Chief. What's it about?
For a wordless moment, human and Zavri stared at each other before Akreen spoke.
My patience is not unlimited.
Inform your captain that there are vital matters that I must discuss with him in person without delay. The human nodded.
Yep, that's right. The First Blade wants a face-to-face, Chief. No use swearing at me, Chief. I'm just a messenger. Okay, I'll get him on that right away.
Ansel straightened and turned to look at a tall, thin biped that Akreen did not recognize from before.
Pancho, the chief needs you to open a portal bridge back to that last balcony, okay?
Akreen watched with growing surprise as the tall humanoid called Pancho activated a tripod-mounted boxy device, which, moments later, projected an oval portal gate next to the concourse balustrade. This, Akreen realized, was how he must have arrived a short while ago. That last gate in the ruined road sequence was like a hub gate, according to the Inheritor machine. It should have sent him into the Sun Heart, but for some reason he ended up here, which had serious implications for the last stage of his journey. The human Ansel called to him and gestured towards the stable portal gate. Akreen glanced over the railing and saw a second gate over on one of the tower balconies, so he stepped forward. It was time that he and Captain Pike conversed on several topics. The glow cubes in the ceiling were no longer working, so someone had set up a couple of lamps so that one of the Malginori medics could examine the emaciated remains of the Shuskar gunlords, or rather, the decrepit Shuskar that had played host to those repugnant sentient biomechs for so long. Pike shuddered.
Who could bear such a thing? To be turned into a wrinkly, shriveled slave. Coffin dodgers, right enough.
Another Malginori was tending to the dozen or so cuts that decorated his hands, courtesy of the Incarnalith shards. The medic was dabbing each wound separately, first with a dab of antiseptic, then with a smear of battlefield-quality skin sealant. He was nearly done when the balcony doors slid aside and a tall, silvery figure stepped into the room. The Malginori reacted with lightning speed, dropping their medical instruments and producing hefty auto pistols in a blink of an eye while bellowing at the newcomer to get down on his knees.
All right, all right! I said all right! He's with me!
Man, this is a Zavri warrior,
said one of the Malginori.
One of the Loyal Seven!
Yeah, well, fortunes of war, roll of the dice and all that stuff. He's helping us now.
Pike looked at Akreen and smiled.
Mr. Akreen is our consultant on Shuskar combat tactics, so if you don't mind, we'll be doing some consulting in private.
He made ushering gestures towards the door, and the Malginori medics retrieved their equipment and left, wearing sullen frowns.
They're fine fellows, actually, Pike said. Bit lacking on the sense of humour side of things, though. Akreen's height made the room seem cramped somehow as he stalked over to the pitiable corpses and stared at them for a few moments. Then he looked up with those piercing eyes.
Four of the five Shuskar gunlords, he said, clearly astonished. Your shards of the Incarnalith. How did they accomplish this?
Pike frowned. How come you know about that?
Ah, wait a second.
I encountered the Inheritor Machine in the Gatuzna tunnels some time after your departure, said Akreen. It had decided to use you as a host for the shards because my mind was deranged by my precursors.
You've lost me now?
The host for the shards of the Incarnalith was originally intended to be me, Akreen said impatiently. You were given almost a third of them, and once I had recovered my sanity, I received the remaining two-thirds.
The tall silver warrior clenched his fists, brought them up to press against his forehead for a moment, then lowered them.
I can hear the voice of Khaldro Vryn demanding vengeance against the enemies of the Zavri.
Just wait until he really gets wound up.
The gunlords were abominations that poisoned all the worlds of the War Cage.
Well, we've got four of the scum-sucking gougers, Pike said, and we've routed the Shuskar's mercenaries. Last report I heard said there's only a few isolated bands gone to ground at the basement level.
Akreen shook his head.
I was sent by the Inheritor Machine via a sequence of portals that were supposed to end at a specific destination, the Sunheart, the Builder's Refuge inside the Sun. My purpose was to reach the command center there, whereupon the Incarnalith shards would seize control of the governing systems and prevent the gunlords from using the ancient drives to crash the War Cage into another sun, which the machine surmised they would do if they realized that defeat was imminent.
Pike nodded. Sounds familiar. I got the same chapter and verse after I picked up my cargo of death splinters, though they didn't say anything about the scumlords using the entire War Cage as a missile. All I had to do was get myself over to the Shuskar's hangout and find a way into their command and control so the Incarnalith shards could do their thing, take over the systems and shut the Shuskar out.
He laughed bleakly.
But dear old Khaldro Vryn had other plans.
Akreen's expression seemed even graver than usual.
Instead of emerging from a portal inside the Sunheart, the hub gate sent me here because there were no other options. The implications are unavoidable. The Sunheart portal gate has been isolated from the rest of the portal network.
Because someone over there doesn't want to be disturbed, Pike said. So, the entire War Cage and all its planets can be steered like some massive bomb ship.
Yes, Captain. Although from what I have been told, it would take some time to prepare the drives for such a journey.
Pike suddenly heard a faint chiming, realized it was coming from his headset, and fumbled it back on.
Hello, hello, yes, it's me. Stop the damn ringing.
The chiming cut off, and Sam Brock spoke. Hello, Captain. Still not dead yet, then?
Well, various types of scumbag have been having a go, Lieutenant, but here I am, still in the game, large as life and twice as handsome.
All across the War Cage, hearts will be a flutter at the news.
That could be both true and worrying, Pike said. So, how did you get on with saving that fleet of yours?
Managed to save some of it, Brock said, sounding subdued all of a sudden. Made contact via the Scarabus, spoke with Vice Admiral Ndoga, and filled him in on his situation. Advised him to hold position while we work on the whole hyperspace defenses problem. I omitted to give him too many details of what we're up against. It just gave him the broad brush picture, so to speak.
Pike glanced at Akreen, who was frowning as if in concentration.
Just as well, Pike said.
The truth about our friend Gunlord Exra Huld might be a bit hard to take, especially as that body-jacking pussbag is over in the Sunheart, getting ready to rev up the engines for a spot of crash-bang mayhem.
Not as such, Brock said. I'm in the command chamber at the top of the tower. Just got here a minute or two ago. Me, Rensik, and a squad of Malginari. After decamping over to this Sunheart bunker, or whatever it is, Exra Huld managed to disable the portal gate over there, which stops us dead in our tracks. And not only that, it looks as if several key control functions have been transferred over there as well.
Just a second, Pike said, looking up at Akreen. Can you hear what we're saying?
The Zavri was composed. The conductive nature of my physiology allows me to attune myself to your device and pick up your discussion.
Pike nodded. Okay, Lieutenant, so what are these functions you mentioned?
Controlling the sun, Brock said bluntly.
Rensik is still scanning the control panels and displays, but he's going on about coronal mass ejections, guided plasma bolus, and multiple targets.
Whoa, what was that? Pike said. What do you mean, coronal ejections? You're not seriously saying that you can fire missiles out of the sun.
Rensik thinks that a rudimentary pressure regulation system has been modified for that purpose, but never used. The most obvious threat is the ES fleet, so perhaps that's what he means by multiple targets.
Captain, said Akreen, I think that it is more likely that the Gunlord would deploy such a devastating weapon against those worlds seeking to defy Shuskar authority, although the intruder vessels could be considered secondary targets.
For a moment, Pike was speechless. The ships, I could understand, but throwing chunks of the sun at planets? What the hell would that do to one?
There would be havoc and widespread destruction, said Akreen. Continents would burn. Superheated plasma would raise atmospheric temperatures, and there would be mass deaths.
Pike could feel the headache coming back and kneaded his temples.
The more I learn about these sentient biomech deathmongers from hell, I just wonder what kind of mad, vicious bastards could set them loose on the universe. I'd get them all together on one asteroid and carpet nuke it from every direction.
He paused and glanced at Akreen while continuing to talk down the channel to Brock.
What about missiles? Any way we could get one through that would throw that filthy skagger off his stride?
Akreen was shaking his head even as Sam Brock replied.
Can't be done. The Sunheart refuge is apparently suspended about 500 miles beneath the corona, and no military missile could survive contact with super-hot plasma for the time it would take.
And even if one could endure it long enough to reach the Sunheart, Akreen pointed out, the detonation might kill or stop Exra Huld, or it might equally destroy some system essential to the war cage's equilibrium. We could accidentally fulfill the Gunlord's lust for destruction.
Does that mean we're boned? Pike said, gnawing on his lip. I refuse to believe that there's no way to stop that pus-sucking vermin.
And no way to get Dervla back.
Rensik says that rebooting the Hubgate system here might force the isolated portal gate in the Sunheart to reset itself into open mode, Brock said over the comm, but he also says that it would take several hours due to subsidiary system sequential something or other.
The silence that took hold then was dismal. Then Akreen spoke.
Captain Pike, there is one hazardous way in which a small task force might reach the Sunheart. However, you may not like it.
Why?
Pike said. What is it?
Well, of course, said Brock slowly. Yeah, you wouldn't.
Oh, this is rich, said Pike. The two of you aren't even in the same room, and you're giving each other nods and winks practically.
Then the import of Akreen's words finally struck home.
Ah, right. I see.
Exactly, Brock said.
So, what we need to know is,
How much punishment can the Scarabus's shields actually take? From his mesh cage's position atop the heap of cases and crates, Rensic had a front-row seat as Gun Lord Exra Huld's plans gradually came to fruition. Here he was, at the very pinnacle of the Sunheart, a colossal edifice of galleried platform and grandiose halls and arches piled on top of each other in towering succession, flanked on all sides by force-field walls filtering the ferocious blaze of the sun to a rippling pale orange. Right here was where the long-vanished builders had decided to locate their main control and observation nexus. Huge display sections spread out like wings to either side, above wide banks of instruments and interface stations. The whole setup looked like a stage upon which great dramas could be played out. And not far away, behind the stack of cases that was Rensic's perch, were curved rows of plush seating awaiting patrons. But Rensic was all the audience there was for Exra Huld's unfolding schemes, not counting the dozen or so pale and wordless thralls doggedly obeying the Gunlord's every command. There were also a few armed Shuskar guards around, somewhere. The drone's field of vision was limited to this vicious and bizarre creature and its enigmatic plans. At the moment, one whole wing of displays was devoted to visual feeds from outside and inside the Citadel World base. Tracking shots of fighting or pursuits through the empty chambers of the Shadow Bastion were intermingled with static views of dead bodies and smouldering debris. The other wing of monitors showed scenes from various worlds scattered across the war cage, fighting and explosions, a common theme, feeds from handheld cams following troops retreating from cities, from towns, from a river or a burning forest, and occasionally there were shots of large transports loading passengers or taking off. The Gunlord was in conversation with a high-ranking Shuskar whose decoration-bejewelled uniform proclaimed his title Lord Governor Pukari of Torgav. His features, however, were stricken with dread as the Gunlord aimed question after question at him.
"Training exercises at this time every year, most exalted," said the Lord Governor. "We had no warning."
"When the Chainers began their campaign of sabotage and ambush over a month ago, all planetary governors were strongly advised to vary the timetables of all military movements."
Exra Huld pointed at the Lord Governor.
"You chose to ignore this advice, and look! Endolak raiders now hold all three of your fortified garrisons, along with their stores, munitions, and vehicles. Unsurprisingly, the capital is also in enemy hands, and your unsupplied forces are in full retreat to the spaceport where you—"
Exra Huld paused to smile cruelly.
"You and your court await my judgment."
"If it pleases you, most exalted one," said Pukari,
dabbing at the sweat on his face and neck with a gauzy cloth.
"Our loyalty has never wavered. I ask, I beg for your aid and assistance, for evacuation from Torgav to the Citadel world. There we can mend our wounds, rebuild our strength, and, with your blessing, prepare a mighty counterattack."
"Gross incompetence like yours would normally be rewarded with a lavishly public and inordinately painful death," said the Gunlord. "But in the aftermath of the triumph to come, I shall have need of bureaucrats to run the agri-worlds. So be of good cheer, Pukari. Your miserable carcass has been saved by your underlings and bean counters. Now go and prepare for evacuation. Transport shall arrive soon."
Exra Huld cut off the Lord Governor in mid-gratitude grovel. Rensic noted how the biomech parasite took great delight in subjecting its subjects and servants to sadistic levels of misery and anxiety. Yet another in a long line of confirming instances in which organics just loved torturing other organics. Because that's what the biomechs were in the end, cyborged amalgams of living tissue and lab-grown pseudopolymer, which could grow and act like organic matter while retaining certain conductive properties. But observing this repellent tyrant was really a matter of collecting details, information which would help to solve the mystery that had been building ever since the Gunlord's arrival on the Citadel world. The drone had known that the command centre at the top of the Shadow Bastion was not Extra Hull's final destination back then, especially when the toadying attendants quickly activated that big, elaborate portal gate and began energetically shoving crates and other luggage through it. "This vile, parasitic half-machine is planning something massively extravagantly horrific, something lurid, resulting in havoc and death, a lot of death. Nothing less will satisfy its ego." Among the crates and cases was one which Rensic thought might be a piece of advanced comms tech, and the way it was plumbed in soon after arrival confirmed it. Not being able to use his senses was intensely aggravating, forcing Rensic to rely solely on visual data. And now, a new image had appeared on one of the displays. The familiar shaven-headed features of the Gunlord's operative Khor. The background looked like a dark corridor lit only by slotted torches. Khor was armed, as were the troops behind him.
"Summarize your position," said Extra Hald. "The trainers pushed the Kregrin and the Avang back into the tower," Khor said. "But, Exalted One, they have been using some kind of portal generator to hit our forces from unexpected directions. We had to pull back or be cut to pieces."
He paused.
"Do you know about the other Gunlords, Most Exalted?" "I felt their passing," said Extra Hult. "Were there any witnesses?" "None. Only rumours of another mystery weapon, Exalted One." "We shall exact a vengeance price," said the Gunlord, "and it shall be easy now that Gabrozen Mav and his rabble have effectively trapped themselves on the Citadel world, or will have done once you render that outworlder ship useless." "Should I attempt to sabotage it?" "No. I want you to go to my flagship and use its weapons to wreck the Outworlder's vessel. The flagship crew have been told to expect you. Also, I have promoted you to Shuskar Admiral and added you to the roster. The ship will now obey your commands." "I am deeply honored, Exalted One. When does the scarring phase begin?"
And at that very moment, a small pointy shape edged into view right outside Rensic's mesh cage. It was Rensic 2.0.
"What in the name of mechanical hell are you doing here?" he said. "Did you send that message?"
"I ensured that it was taken care of," said the mini-drone. "I came after you because my analysis revealed that your incarceration would remove a crucial variable from all possible incident strings. Conversely, your freedom to act shifts all other variables into less disastrous outcome configurations." "Less disastrous? Scarcely an inspiring qualifier. Once free from captivity, your actions can directly influence the outcome configurations themselves. In the meantime, I would strongly suggest departing from your prison, since the tyrant's discussion with its underling appears to be reaching a conclusion."
There was a soft click, and the mesh wall of the confining box slid upwards.
"Ah well," Rensic thought, "it would be a relief to be back out in the world of signals and data again, and, after all, the youngster has clearly gone to a lot of trouble."
Silently hovering, Rensic floated out of the cage and stealthily followed his scion down from the stage dais, then slipped into the shadows beneath the nearest staircase. Below the entire auditorium was a web of supporting frameworks and a network of heavy-duty feed cables.
"I know how much you like raw data flows,"
said Renzik 2.0.
Most thoughtful of you, said Renzik 1.0. Time we got to work on shifting those variables.